Rolling Stones there. Have you seen your mother, baby? Standing in the shadow. Well, standing in our shadow right now are John Renburn and Wiz Jones. A very, very warm welcome to the studio. How are you?
We're fine, I reckon. How are you, Wiz?
Yes, well, I'm feeling good today.
Good. You've had a little break from your sort of never-ending tour. You weren't playing last night, Wiz?
No, we weren't playing last night. We had a day off, which was lucky because one of the cars broke down, so it's a good job we did have a day off.
Sure, it's a usual kind of tour, right? Chaos.
It is, exactly. But out of chaos, it's one of my favourite sayings at the minute, out of chaos comes bliss.
Well, we're waiting.
There's
it could
Dylan
happen
Thomas.
Any minute, right?
Why do you play and continue to play? What drives you? What pulls you to play music? You started at a very early age, both of you. Let's start with you, John.
Sure. Oh, man, I got very miserable a while back and I decided I was never going to go on tour ever again. I got really grumpy. But I hooked up with old Wiz and I love playing music with Wiz, so that's what takes me out on the road.
You've both known each other for a very long time. Wiz, why did you decide to go back on the road with John?
Well, I was working on my own anyway and doing gigs and I don't quite know how it happened now, to be honest. How did it come about that we actually started working together?
Well, I think what happened was I was working with Robin Williamson from the String
that's
Band.
That's right, yeah.
Right.
And Wiz came along because we're all old buddies from the same vintage. And we played together an impromptu trio.
Yeah.
And people said it was great, you know, which was pretty loose. And somehow or another, me and Wiz kind of stuck together and did a few things after that. And the gigs come in, so it's nice.
Well, tell us a bit about that era. Wiz, you released your debut album in 1969. And John, you got together with Bertie Ansch. That was around 1965. What was the scene like then? Because you started as a classical guitar player. What pulled you towards the sort of folk and jazz area?
Oh, I started way back. You know, my family all played something, so I was plunking something. There's a picture of me when I was about five with the banjo, so I went through all kinds of stuff. It was all sorts of different music. It was just in the early 60s that I was faced with the terrible dilemma of having to get a job and found myself preferring to travel and play. And that's when I first met Wiz, because Wiz was already out there doing it.
Yeah. And Wiz, yourself, you have had a renaissance recently, haven't you? You were on Radio 4 with
Pete
Perfidious.
Tell me. I haven't noticed any spin-off from it, to be honest.
Haven't you?
No.
You've been around for quite a while. And one of my favourite stories is that you were around with a young Rod Stewart showing him the way around Europe. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, that's what he says, yeah.
Is it
but,
not true?
You should not believe these stories
tell
a lot
me.
Of the time.
Tell me.
Well, he used to hang out. Yeah, he was one of the young guys hanging around when I was playing. I started out in the late 50s. I was a late starter. I was about 17 when I started playing, about 1957, 58. And I just played skiffle and country and western, you know, and I was busking. I've always just been a busker most of my life, you know. And I think that's where Rod saw me, busking.
Yeah.
And we shared a girlfriend at one point. That's probably a connection.
At the same time?
Yeah. Not quite the same time, but pretty consecutive.
And did he not come to you? He was just a huge fan, but and in his memory, he came with you around Europe. Was that not
no,
true
No, he
at
didn't
all?
Come round with me, no. He saw me playing in London and played a bit of a harmonica one day next to me, and he also saw me in Paris, apparently. He tells the story of how we hitchhiked to Spain. That's all a load of rubbish. I can't even remember Keith Richards, but he says he learned some blues riffs from me in 19-something. But I can't remember that, but it's probably true. I don't know. There's a lot of young guys hanging around at the time, wasn't
there? Yeah. And you wouldn't necessarily remember because it was before they'd sort of made a name for themselves.
Sure, yeah, yeah. They were students, I guess.
It gives me the image of some sort of Pied Piper with these young guitarists that you would then influence.
Yeah, but I was only following people who'd gone before me. We all like to think we're original, but I mean, we're just following our heroes, really. Yeah, Alex Campbell, people like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Who else do you like listening to? I mean, I've been playing some Snooks. I know you enjoyed that, John.
Oh, yeah.
How about you, Wiz? Who are you listening
to? Well,
both
John and I were influenced tremendously by David Graham. Mm. And I was completely stunned when Bert Jantz arrived because he was influenced by David Graham as well. But he was a genius and went on and did other things. And we're just guitar freaks, really, aren't we, John? We listen to Jeff Beck or whoever, you know.
Sure. But, I mean, Wiz was one of the first guys I heard who could really play that stuff. I mean, we all started in the 50s being smitten by the American blues men and finger-picking characters.
Yeah.
Josh White was over. Yeah. I used to go and hear Josh White when I was little, and it was fantastic.
Careless,
you know?
Love, his version of that.
It's beautiful. And Rambling Jack Elliott, called Jack, and Big Bill Brunsey. Yeah. So by the time the early 60s rolled around, those guys had gone back and left a few people like Davey and Wiz who could really play it. So that's how that started for me, because I'd hang around listening to Wiz and Davey if I ever could, you know.
It's extraordinary when you follow the story and history of music, isn't it? And people that trailblaze and drop the little seeds, and then they grow into different styles.
We all thought we were playing American music, like as if we were American, but when they finally heard it in the States, they said, oh no, this is an English sound.
Yeah,
this is your own take, you know, which we didn't know that was, but apparently it was.
Wiz, I was talking to Mick Houghton last week about Sandy Denny, and I wanted to play Matty Groves because it's my favourite Fairport Convention song, and he told me in no uncertain terms that Sandy hated the song because it was one of her popular songs, and I'm about to do the same to you, I think. I mean, your numero uno sort of song, When I Leave Berlin.
Yeah, well, Pete Perfidis did that programme, Albatross, did you hear that?
Yeah.
He talked about everywhere. Ralph had Streets of London, and it's become When I Leave Berlin has become my Albatross now because I'm sick of it. You know, it's the only thing people know me for, you know.
It's a great song.
When they opened the wall just for the weekend in Berlin in 1971, it was quite an emotional time, you know. So I wrote the song, and then I recorded it, but I never played it ever again because it's, you know, I couldn't sing it very well. But then, of course, when Bruce did it, I just thought, well, I better start playing it again then.
Do you play it now? I bet.
Sometimes, if people ask for it, I'll do it, yeah.
When did you write it, and where and why?
Well, it was, as I say, it was in Berlin. I was working a lot in Germany. I happened to be in Berlin that weekend playing some gigs. And for some reason, they decided to open the border so that people could go backwards and forwards, east to west, and just for the weekend, so people could hook up with relatives and stuff. And it was quite an emotional thing. It was long before the wall ever came down. And so I was moved by that. I went to Checkpoint Charlie and watched everybody going backwards and forwards. This is amazing. And I just wrote the song, and then I recorded it. But as I say, never got around to singing it much because it modulates into another key and I couldn't handle the vocal. But I've just got to now if people ask for it.
I'll tell you what, Wiz, if you go outside of the studio, make yourself a cup of tea, and then I'll play it, OK?
OK.
Wiz Jones and When I Leave Berlin. I'm joined today by Wiz Jones and John Renbourn. Wiz, the recording of that particular version there, how many banjo players are on the track?
Yeah, there's two, Sandy, my wife, and a guy called Don Cogan, who we met purely by accidents one day in a pub after my wife was going for banjo lessons with Tom Paley.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, and learning to frail. And she got the book, the John Burke book, with the melodic claw hammer frailing stuff. So she learned all that stuff. And then we went to the pub afterwards, and there was this guy in there called Don Cogan playing all this great banjo.
Yeah.
So we started playing with him, and then gradually the album with the band Lazy Farmer, we put a band together called Lazy Farmer, made an album with all that sort of stuff on it, and toured Germany. And then we all went our different ways after that.
Tom Paley's still going. He's got
He's
a new album
strong,
coming
yeah.
out soon on Hornbeam Records. So I've just got a little sneak preview recently. So, John, how about you say that you learned to play guitar from a book by Rory McEwen.
Oh, that's gone into myth, hasn't it? Yeah.
Is that not true?
Well, not particularly true, no.
Because you said you've been playing since you were young.
Yeah,
from your parents.
But there was a little book. It had just had a drawing on the front by Rory McEwen, OK?
Yeah.
And it was a book with Peggy Seeger and Ann Lomax put out called American Folk Guitar.
Yeah.
And that was back in the 50s sometime, I think, you know. That was a nice book, you know, and it introduced a lot of people to the different traditional styles and some of the good songs, yeah.
I had a book when I was growing up, How to Play Blues Guitar. So I find it quite funny now, looking back, here's an 8 or 9-year-old girl in a Swansea bedroom playing, you know, Corina or Alberta. I'm trying to play these old, you know. Is it my belly... is rumbling and the belly button's catching books. Anyway, but it's brilliant what you can get out of these old books, isn't it? And the styles that you can learn out of them.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And you are embracing the new. What I'm fascinated about your career now, John, is that you're there online on YouTube teaching people all these different ways of playing guitar. How and when did that start?
Well, I think the things on YouTube are probably from Stefan Grossman's guitar workshop things. And I did some lessons teaching that through Stefan's company.
Yeah.
And the people probably put them up on YouTube and Stefan probably goes around frantically trying to take them off. So I don't know quite how that works. But these days I do my own guitar workshops.
Yes.
And they're called residential workshops, and like real people come along in real time. And we pick somewhere nice in the world and sit around for a week and just play music and drink wine.
Rachel from Cardiff is referring to these. She gave us a question for you, John. A question for you. Do you get a lot out of running the guitar workshops abroad? And what made you decide to start running them? They look like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's turned out they are great. It started because an old friend of mine from Paris had a place down in the south of France. And we thought we could organise one ourselves. And then we sure enough discovered that our organisational skills weren't that wonderful. And one person came up to me and said the music was great, but anybody could organise this better.
Yeah.
So I said, well, go ahead and do it. So somebody else now organises the things.
Yeah.
We have them we've had them in Andalusia. We're having one coming up in Crete. Another one in the Salvador Dali area of Spain. So we pick really good places.
What do you need to bring? Your kind of guitar? Any kind of guitar, electric, or does it have to be acoustic, steel,
nylon?
It's
absolutely, totally open. There's no pressure. It's not those
ukulele.
Workshops where anyone can... You have to come up to any standard. It's pretty loose, but it's nice. So what I get out of it most is the people that come from all different walks of life. So... At the end of it, you'll find guys that are diplomats, people that are dealing in the oil business, guys that are in, you know, commerce, and other guys who've been busted for vagrancy and are sleeping rough, and they're all together in this great pile of nice people, and that's nice.
What's the most popular song there? Which was one you start people off on? I'm going to play a clip now. We stole it from online, so you can tell us where it's from. Okay. It's talking about the nails and how your choice of nail covering. Is Buffalo one of the most popular songs that you start with?
Well, we kind of used to pitch it that we'd try to do a little bit of basic blues, a little bit of basic finger picking, then do a little bit of how it began to develop a little bit more with some of maybe Bert's things. Mm-hmm. Wiz is going to come along now and he's going to be a tutor.
Cool.
And then also I need to do some kind of Elizabethan things. So there's no one particular thing. We just do, you know, a combination of styles.
I'd like to ask you about that medieval song interest that you have, but let's hear a little clip first.
Before we look more closely at that tune, I should mention something about my technique of playing. I use three fingers on the right hand and the thumb, whereas often more traditional American-style players might use just the first two fingers, or maybe even thumb and first finger. It's in the case of, say, Mole Travis, Elizabeth Cotton, in fact, the whole generation of old-time finger pickers. I like to use my fingernails, or rather a type of fingernail. These days I stick some on, and you could buy a product called Player's Nails, or you can make your own. These are actually made out of ping pong balls, and they're stuck on under my real nail and filed down. I find them very effective. They're kind of clean sounding and accurate, and if you break one, you can always replace it without too much problem.
What,
doing this workshop thing?
We're live now, just to warn you, you know that.
Okay.
Do you remember that? What was that from, that clip?
I think that was from one of Stefan's famous, you know, teaching videos. Sure.
Show me your hands now, John.
Yeah, okay, there we are. See, like, nothing to worry.
No ping pongs.
Not that one, then? Okay,
yes,
they're still on there, right?
Can I have a look to see?
You can indeed.
You know, going to the gel shop is getting quite expensive. Might just try out these ping pongs instead. Do you ever use shellac now? You know, because you can now, the thing is to use shellac for your nails.
Oh, yeah, people tell me I'm living in the Dark Ages. I'm scorned for using these old ping pong balls. But I mean, they work. There's nothing too much wrong with them, apart from the fact that they're flammable.
Do they ping off at any point?
Oh, they have done in the past. The Pentangle came out of retirement. We played a very big show at the Barbican. And as I was playing, one fell off, right? So I was clever. I had some super glue with me and another one under the chair. So as Jackie McShee was singing her song, I stuck it on, but I didn't know if the glue was coming out or not, so I bit the top of the super glue and I stuck my lips together, my dear. So these things have a drawback.
You brought us neatly into this. Let's have some music from Pentangle. It's such a lovely mix of genres, isn't it? What time signature is that in, John?
5/4 and 7/4. Yeah. That came about because the drummer would like to mix time signatures, as drummers do.
Yeah.
But the knack is to get something complicated but still make it swing, right?
Yeah.
So he came up with those nice patterns and we wrote a little song around it, and it was a hit. So it was amazing to be in a pub and see pissed people trying to whistle it and dance it, because it can't be done, right?
Well, let's look at Pentangle. Jackie McShee, Danny Thompson, Terry Cox, Bert Jansch, and yourself, John Renbourn. It's like a real Madrid of folk players all in one band. How difficult was it? What were the mechanics in such a musically rich band, in writing and choosing the direction and getting on with each other?
Yeah, it wasn't difficult at all. It was a lock-in right from the start, you know. Danny and Terry used to play down at the Cousins, and me and Bert used to play at a little club in Soho. They used to play with Alexis Corner. So we got to know them then, and we just hooked up and joined forces. And years later, in 2008, we came back after a huge period of not playing together.
Yeah.
Just hardly anyone spoke, just started playing, and it was all there still. Amazing, you know.
Very briefly now, your interest in medieval music.
OK, I went to a school that specialised in boxing and cross-country running. And one day a new teacher came to the school. The headmaster said, this teacher can teach music, but should anyone want to take music, they will have to forego cross-country running and boxing. So my hand shot up and I became a music student. And it turned out the music teacher was a great fan of early music at a time when it wasn't part of the curriculum.
Yeah.
So we'd sit together and he'd, you know, show me the harmony lessons I had to do.
Yeah.
And then say, yeah, but think how it would have been done. Think how Thomas Tallis might have done it. Go back to my show. So I got a real interest in the music then.
You'd have to come back on the show and pick some medieval tunes and talk us through them.
I'd love to.
Wiz, was medieval music something that was in your repertoire?
No, straight over my head, I'm afraid. I'd love listening to it, but I don't think I'd go there.
What do you listen to on a Sunday morning?
On a Sunday morning?
Yeah.
Well, if I'm up. I don't know, probably jazz if I can find some. But
any favourite recordings or musicians?
Well, I love Sebastian... what's it called? Polar Bear.
Yeah.
That's one of my favourite bands. Pretty off the wall, and pretty sort of... Seb... I've got his second name now, but
okay,
Polar
Alison,
Bear is his band, anyway.
Like. So you keep up with music that's
I try and listen. I listen to a lot of jazz for some reason or other. Can't play it, but I listen to it.
There's so many tour dates to mention. You seem to be on a perpetual tour. Do you love touring, Wiz? Is that what you just absolutely are driven to do?
Well, it's in your blood, isn't it? I love playing. It gets harder when you're older, the logistics of getting from town to town, as it's hard to get good tours together in that way. And I always think that if I didn't have to play, I wouldn't, but that's probably not true.
Please come back so we can give more time to each one of you and your careers. And you've been so highly influential with us. It's an absolute honour to have you on the show. Will you come back when we've got more time? And I know you've selected some brilliant music for us to play over the next few weeks as well, so thank you for doing that. Wiz Jones, John Renbourn, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you
this
morning. Thanks for coming in.
Yes.